Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another Kickstarter Spotlight episode. Today, I'm joined by a veteran comic artist who has a really cool campaign going on right now for a sketchbook. So we're going to talk a little bit about how he discovered comics and his process, and we'll let you know all about the campaign, and you can go over and check it out. So it's my pleasure for the first time to welcome Mike Hawthorne on the show. Mike, thanks for joining me.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I always love talking to artists, especially veterans like yourself, who've been around for a while. And I'm curious about your process, but we got to talk a little secret origin, as we always do when we have somebody on the show for the first time. So were comics a big part of your childhood? Did you start reading them when you were a kid? Were there any favorites that you had as a youngster?
Yeah, absolutely. Although I think I came to them a little later than most of my friends, because I had a god brother who his older brother collected comics, and he had kind of weird taste. Only I didn't know it at the time. So, and in those days, these dudes would like literally buy comics and toss them, which sounds crazy now, but he would just basically let me have them, and he knew I liked to draw because I was always drawing graffiti and people's notebooks, people's names and stuff. So he had really weird taste. Like, he would read everything from pretty straightforward superhero stuff to like, he was reading like the 2000 AD Judge Dredd stuff, like weird black and white books I'd never heard of. So it was a cool introduction to comics because it was a little more multifaceted. So that when I started, you know, discovering comic shops and picking up books, I didn't know that my taste was a little off, right? So I was like reading everything from X-Men to Love and Rockets to Heavy Metal Mag to like, one of my favorite comics was this thing like a black and white book called Warlock 5, which nobody ever like remembers. And it all came from this intro that this guy gave me where, you know, because his taste was varied, that seemed normal to me. So that's what I seeked out when I went to a comic shop for the first time.
Yeah, that's cool. I've never heard of Warlock 5 either, but you know, as an artist, being introduced to 2000 AD really early and that really sort of diverse amount of art styles, was it that diverse style of art that pulled you in? Was it more stories? Was it a bit of both?
It was definitely the art. You know, like, and getting back to the Warlock 5 thing, like, it's sad because I can't remember off the top of my head who the artist was, but like the look was at the time, like it just blew my head off because he was doing this stuff with like airbrushed gray tones, and it almost had a kind of digital look, but you know, all done by hand.
Right.
So I was nuts for that stuff, man. Like anything that looked cool. It didn't have to be a specific style because I hadn't really had a concrete idea of what a comic book should look like. You know what I mean? I think what happens is like you say, you know, you fall in love with Spider-Man and you kind of want everything to look like that. Because I sort of had a mix of stuff right out the gate. I just fell in love with all of it, which is probably like one of the things that's said about my work is that like there's not always a unified style from book to book. And it probably comes from that early introduction where I like, you know, switching of genres, switching of styles, doing different like approaches to a thing. So yeah, I think it all comes back to that early introduction. I mean, like something like Heavy Metal, I would love to death because it was every story looked different, you know? So to this day, I think that's still something that speaks to me, you know, more so than the story by far, you know, because I honestly couldn't tell you any of those early comics, like what the hell was happening. I just cared what it looked like.
Yeah. I think that's so true. Cause like you said, you know, somebody falls in love with a certain book or a certain style, that sort of that commercial superhero style. Then you can get into bad habits, and then you gotta later on figure out how to bake those bad habits. And maybe people don't they'll put you in a box as an artist, right? I don't think that's
absolutely
ever, yeah, that's ever been the case with you. Like you said, your previous portfolio of things you work on is hugely diverse. So did you realize, you know, falling in love with those books and having that art really have an effect on you? Hey, this is what I'm going to do and I can make a career of this, or did that come later also?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, I can actually remember the specific comic where like, it was, that's a lie. Actually, I remember the specific series. I can't remember the issue number, but it was a copy of the X-Men by Mark Silvestri. And I remember, you know, looking at the credits page and it hitting me like, wow, these are actual people making these things. And this is a job, like that's for me. And I mean, this was like middle school or something, like, and I decided then, like, that's it. It's comics. I don't care about anything else. So, yeah, I think there was just something really like almost mythical, not so much about the comics themselves or the stories, but the fact that like you could, you know, make a living drawing these crazy things and experiment and jump around and do different stories. Like that seems like, how is this possible? But if it is, I got to make it happen, you know?
Yeah, it definitely takes dedication and hard work. And I think I've talked to a lot of comic artists about this. They don't realize, because a lot of people have a story similar to yours where it's a moment or a series or a particular artist they follow. And yeah, that moment clicks and they realize, hey, somebody's paid to do this. But at the time with that sort of exuberance of youth, you maybe don't realize how hard it's going to be.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Hell yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, you, when you're hitting a wall and you're kind of thinking like, what the hell did I do to myself? Because I mean, I did eventually go to art school and, you know, had opportunities to like get my master's, for free, which I turned down because I thought, no way, I'm going to go do comics, which like obviously things worked out, but I recognize now how stupid it was to put all my eggs in that basket. And you know, it's true. Things are very, very difficult. And it's kind of hard to understand sometimes, like, why do comic artists like do this to themselves?
Right.
You know, because it's not a financially secure job. It's not, you know, even if you're a big shot today, you know, next year, that may not be the case. And then you're trying to hustle gigs or whatever. But it's hard for me to imagine having made a life any other way. I mean, I teach in a college, and I enjoy that immensely, but I don't know that anything could sort of take the place of this, just drawing comics, making art books, things like that.
Yeah. And that's sort of the magic that you're trying to capture with the sketchbook and the campaign. We'll talk about that in a second. But I want to talk about your process first. Obviously, yeah, you know, you're of the generation that, you know, you started out, and I think this is the case for even a lot of people that you know, start off today, but maybe less so. Maybe there are some that start off digitally, just with, you know, technology and the tools that are there. But you started off traditionally and then you've transitioned to digital. Is that correct?
I still work digitally. I mean, I am not. So I'm in that weird generation where there was always like digital art. You know, even when I was in art school, there were still people like, I mean, hell, I was in high school when I first made my first couple of digital pieces. And I was with like, you know, rudimentary tools compared to now with like, you know, a Cintiq or an iPad with a pencil. So I always had, luckily, I always had that exposure to digital work and production. So it's always been a part of my workflow. Like even in the beginning, you know, I would maybe draw a layout, scan it, tweak it digitally, and then blow it up to 11 by 17 and then print it out and tighten up pencils. I don't do that so much anymore, but, you know, early on, there was always this sort of hybrid digital and traditional approach. And I still work traditionally today, although I do a lot of digital stuff for like my personal work, like the stickers I design and things like that. I prefer the traditional work for my comic stuff for a couple of reasons. Number one is you have a piece of artwork, which to me is cool. And if, you know, I decide I can part with the stuff, I can sell it. Obviously, like, there are some options for that with digital, but it's less straightforward. Mm-hmm. And so that, and also, you know, I just still like the tactile feel of drawing with a pencil and paper. But you know, my hybrid system is still in place. Like, I still will do layouts in Procreate, you know, digitally, and blow them up and print those out. So, you know, it's really still this mix, and it just depends on what feels right at the time or how much time you have. I don't think that, like, I'm married to one particular way. I actually think I could switch over to completely digital given the right circumstances, you know?
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, I know it's a big time saver. Is that why you do the layout? Because, you know, that stage of laying out a page, you know, the panels on a page, as well as the composition within the panels, I feel like a lot of times that's where you're trying to figure things out. Like, is it going to work this way? Oh, maybe it doesn't. Doing that part digitally probably saves you a lot of time. Is that accurate?
Yeah, sometimes. I think more so for me is it is a time saver for sure. I think what it does for me, though, is it allows me to experiment more often. Like, I know I would notice that when I would do layouts on paper, I kind of treat it like I'm just taking quick notes, right? Everything is in shorthand. Mm-hmm. Where in digital, like, I tend to slow down and draw things and sort of flesh them out more. So it doesn't so much speed up the layout process for me as much as helps me solidify the idea before going to the pencil pages. And lately it's like, it's almost like, my pencil layouts are just a joke. Like, if there are times when I'm looking at them and I'm like, what the hell? Like, what did I what was I don't even know what the hell I drew. Yeah. So I just find that I either do like no layouts and go straight into a page because I have a feel for what I want to do, or these digital ones are sort of when I'm not sure exactly how I want to approach it, or if I want to try something a little more like experimental or goof around a little more, because you can sort of wipe the slate clean and start over, but keep certain parts that maybe you dig.
Gotcha. Gotcha. One more question about process before we dive into the campaign. I'm curious, now that you've been doing it for so long, has it become easier, regardless of which writer you're working with or which project you're working on? does it get easier to collaborate with writers? Do you have a better kind of understanding? Do you remember back in the early days, was it kind of tougher to kind of figure out what was in their head and get it down on paper? You feel like you've got a better handle on that now?
Yeah, that's a good question. I have been lucky in that I've tended to work with writers that I get. And there's been a couple of oddball cases where we're not always on the same page, or maybe we start a series and you're not on the same page. Like, you know, many years ago, I did a G.I. Joe Origins thing with Larry Hama. And I thought we were having a conversation and there was a scene with Roadblock, and he had written, suggesting some sort of dialogue. And I stupidly like made a joke where I think you mean this. And I had Roadblock's dialogue rhyme, like in the old cartoons. Mm-hmm. And it kind of rubbed him the wrong way. And I realized, like, I didn't know him well enough to like make that kind of joke yet. Like, to me, I wasn't taking G.I. Joe as seriously as, you know, this man who had invested an enormous amount of his working career in it. So, I think what's happening is, like, I'm probably better at reading the room when it comes to like a new writer and just taking it slow versus like being a goofball right out the gate and just saying like, F it, then you'll, they'll deal. So in that regard, probably it's not so much easier as much as like, I've chilled out a little bit. But you know, like, honestly, the best times are when you're a little pickier about like, who you'll work with. And I think most of the time everybody gets it, and you're all sort of getting along. But you know, you sort of learn, and this goes back to reading the room. You sort of learn when, like, someone's probably not, you know, this isn't necessarily like a judgment of the person, but you sort of know, like, yeah, I'm probably not going to get along well with this person, so I maybe, you know, should just not avoid them, but make sure that, you know, for both our sakes, we, you know, we don't get locked into a long series or something.
Gotcha.
And and it's not even like a, like, oh, this guy sucks, I don't want to work with him. It's more of a, like, you know, this person and I mean, you just sort of know when you're working with someone, whether, like, I'm going to get on this guy's nerves or this woman's nerves pretty quick if I'm not, you know, because I'm a little too goofy and they're a little more cerebral. Like, I'm not a, I'm not a really super bright dude, man. So people are like, you know, when they're like really into the sort of the writing process, I can be a little goofy, and I think that's kind of a turnoff. So, you know, you sort of learn to, like, either tone that down or avoid them so that you don't, you know, make people unhappy.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know if that's a good answer though, man.
No, I get what you're saying. Okay. I mean, it's no different than you know, sometimes in film, you know, or television, where sometimes the casting just doesn't gel, or a sports team where you can have two people that are super talented, but for some reason, you know, they just they look at things differently, and it doesn't click. I mean, it's the same thing with comics, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, and for me, like, my personality type is to, like, not take anything seriously. And that can be a big turnoff. I mean, like, it was a huge issue for me going through, because I've gone to a couple art schools, and it's, you know, you forget how serious people take the arts, and having a goofball in the room can get on people's nerves. And so that's 100% me. Like, I know my limitations, and one of them is I can't take shit seriously. So if there's a joke to be made or something, like, I'm probably going to make it. And, you know, and not like in an inappropriate way. I'm not like making people uncomfortable, but like, if you're trying to take the job seriously, like the roadblock example, like, mm-hmm. You know, Larry and I came to become close friends. Like, I shouldn't say close. I don't want to make it sound like we hang out every day or something, but we became good work friends because I realized, like, this joke was insensitive to this guy who takes this stuff very, very seriously. And I chilled out. And the truth is that I take my job very seriously. It's just that it's done alone and on the page. And if I have to talk about it, I tend to get goofier. And he started to see the work I was doing and came to appreciate, like, my attention to detail, trying to get things accurately drawn, get, you know, if it's a military reference, trying to do the research. And so we got to be, you know, like, we had an understanding after a while, and I would totally work with the guy again, drop of a hat. And he said the same to me. So it really is just it's really a me thing of just, like, you know, everybody's in the 12th grade and I'm still in the, like, third. and that's going to bug people sometimes.
Yeah. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, that's just your personality. And you know, I think some people think when, cause I'm that way. I crack a lot of jokes, and people think, oh, he's joking around cause he doesn't care. No, that's not true at all. Yeah, I care a lot.
That's 100% it, dude.
Yeah. But life's too short, man. Yeah. You got to try to have fun when you can.
Yeah. Know? Yeah. I think that that's it. 100%. And that's the thing I never intend. Like, I don't want people thinking that I just don't care, or that I'm indifferent, or I think I'm cool or something. It's just, you know, I sort of handle everything with humor and being kind of goofy. So, you know, it is what it is. But we tend to, I mean, the on the flip side, I've been really lucky. Like, I've really connected with just about all the writers that I've worked with. And it's people that, you know, years later, we still talk and we're friends and we want to work again together. And you can tell from, you know, if you ever spend any time on comics Twitter, you see it's kind of a small world. Mm-hmm. And so if you were a genuinely bad person, you tend to get like eventually exposed. So I can't say that like I've worked with bad people that like I haven't gotten along with writers for whatever particular reason. They've all been, you know, solid, good people. It's just a matter of whether you get sort of a working understanding. It's not usually a personal thing.
Yeah, exactly. And I gotta think that especially teaching, you know, the younger generation and whatnot, and trying to give back, which is sort of what you're doing with the campaign. Humor helps a lot.
Hell yeah. I mean, yeah. I love it. It's an opportunity to like break out all the old dad jokes in college, and they have to like pretend to not think it's funny when we all know damn well.
They're groaning at your dad jokes for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the good news is I can always threaten to give them an F. Like laugh at my jokes or else. No, I'm just kidding. I don't do that.
That's great. Well, another thing that, you know, going back to what you said about it, comics being a small industry, you know, I've been doing this for almost 10 years now and got a chance to meet, you know, a huge amount of writers and editors and artists and whatnot. And one of the things I hear from a lot of people, if you want to be successful in comics, there's three things. You can be nice, you can be really good, or you can be fast. And you need, you need two of those three things. And the number one thing that people will choose if you give them an option for a collaborator is have them be nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody wants to work with a jerk.
Yeah. It's 100% true. And especially like it, when it's an industry that's this sort of, you know, small, word gets out pretty fast if you're like a difficult, unpleasant person. And we've seen that in a more serious way with guys who have done like really crappy things to people. Mm-hmm. But there's sort of a like, there's a sense of that. It's like in any job, right? Like, oh, Bill from accounting is always sticking his finger in people's pie or something. Like, or stealing stuff out of the lunchroom fridge or whatever. There's that kind of talk. Yeah. I don't know why I said stick a finger in a pie. That's like a weird thing. I just imagine like, having to work with a guy that would like, I love pie. I don't know if I mentioned that. And so I just was thinking like, what's the worst thing a guy I worked with could do to me? And it would probably be to ruin my pie.
Yeah.
And I feel like that would be the thing, especially in the age of Corona, like just putting Corona directly into the pie. That would be so heartbreaking.
Yes.
Anyway, what was I saying? Oh yeah. People talk and you sort of know like, oh man, this person's unpleasant. We should probably avoid them. But for the most part, most people are cool and most people want to work. And you're right. It's two of those things. You know, but for me, it's great to be nice. And when you want to work with someone, but you know, the thing that keeps it going long-term is when they're also good, right? Like, you know, I had a long run on Deadpool, and what made that so exciting was that Jerry and Brian and everybody on the team were all super nice. Like we all got along, but they're also like all super talented and they're all doing this great stuff and they're coming up with storylines. I was like, Jesus, where is this going? This is great. Like as a fan, that makes it more exciting for me. Like I can almost get past someone like being a little like, you know, unpleasant if they're like that amazing. We just got lucky in that, you know, these guys, most of the folks I've gotten to work with are super talented and super cool, you know, like I'm lucky, very lucky.
Yeah. Well, I think overall in comics, most people are pretty cool. They're a lot of them came up as fans themselves. They love comics. I mean, nobody, as you know, nobody says, I'm going to be a millionaire. I want to be so rich. I know what. I'll make comics.
Dude, can I let you in on a secret? I legitimately said that when I was a kid. I swear to God, I really thought it was like, oh, I'm going to be rich, dude. Like, especially like after, you know, this was post, you know, Jim Lee. And
oh, yeah, yeah.
Liefeld and McFarlane. And I'm like, that's for me, dude. I'm going to get a yacht. I'm going to
make commercials.
I'm going to drive my yacht down the street. It's going to be amazing. I really stupidly thought I was not a bright kid. I don't know if I mentioned that. that. But I genuinely thought, yeah, man, this is going to be amazing. I'm going to be loaded. And I ended up self-publishing at the time when there was kind of a comics glut in independent publishing. And so, yeah, I very much did not get rich. And you're right. Most people have the common sense to go, I'm going to do this thing because I enjoy it. But inevitably, you still have people who are thinking of it as like intellectual property farms, or like comics are just research and development for film. And I've gotten offers where, you know, something's linked to like a movie person. And I tend to avoid those because you can sort of read when they're just not into comics and, you know, yeah. it's just not, you know. So to get back to the original point is like, I was foolish enough to think I was going to make a bunch of money, but I stayed because the job is just fun and the people you get to work with are usually really fun.
Yeah, I really think that's a little bit more of a later development, you know, with really right around 2008 when the first Iron Man movie came out. And from that point on, we kind of headed toward comics as the center of pop culture, which is so interesting for guys of our generation.
Yeah,
it wasn't a thing. When I first started reading comics, I didn't even tell anybody. It was one of those things that you didn't share because people would make fun of you. So it's been
that comic I was talking about, the X-Men one, like I remember rolling that in my pocket, rolling it up, putting it in my back pocket,
yeah,
riding back to my crummy neighborhood and showing everybody like, yo, you can make money drawing these pictures. I don't know if I just grew up in a weird ass bubble or something, but I didn't get like there wasn't and maybe it's a city thing. I think like you see it in hip hop culture. You see it in cities where, like, you know, the Wu-Tang Clan were like all comic readers, man. Like, there was something, you know, like Bill Sienkiewicz did the covers to like EPMD albums. So mm-hmm. There wasn't like a stink to reading comics. You know what I mean? And I grew up really loving graffiti, and you look at the old graffiti from even the 70s and 80s. And it's riddled with like these guys copying cartoon characters from comic books or comic strips or whatever. So, you know, for me, it was like, it was just the coolest damn thing in the world that was a job. And there was really no downside. I really just thought, this is it. It's a dream world, man.
Yeah. That's so cool that you had that experience. And I mentioned earlier with your campaign, that you mentioned in the description of the campaign that you're trying to capture that sort of, you know, magic of your youth where, you know, you just spend the day sketching, you know, so this isn't an art book that's filled with, you know, completely finished images or whatever. It's more about your process. And I would encourage anybody who is, you know, trying to break in, who's trying to learn, this is a book you need to go and take a look at. Because you can see so much of the different stages of art. So in your own words, Mike, why don't you, what is the campaign? What is this All City Volume 1 sketchbook really about?
You kind of summed it up. I mean, I buy a lot of art books, and the ones that I'm the least interested in are usually the ones that are very polished and full of, you know, finished paintings and things like that. And that might be a reaction to my training. Like I went to art school to study painting, and there was a very kind of, you know, stuffy kind of academic approach to art. And you never saw sketches and drawings and things like that. And I can remember actually the first time I went to it was a Michelangelo show in DC with just his pencil drawings, which are very rare. Like usually these things were destroyed because they didn't want anybody to see them. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I remember looking at this and going like, this is the way, dude. Like it was the Mandalorian. Like this is, I remember thinking like his sketchbooks just, they look like, and I don't mean in a way like I'm comparing. You know, I'm looking at his sketchbooks and I'm like, we're not that far removed from each other. Mm-hmm. Like there was still a magic to just sitting down with a sketchbook and just working out ideas or just drawing for the enjoyment of it. And it just struck me, like, this is the thing I'm going to do forever and ever and ever. And this art book, this All City art book, is really that sort of all in one place. I'm going to take, and we've already made one. We made volume zero as sort of a proof of concept just to see how it would go. And what I would do is try to fill the thing up with like developmental sketches for stuff that you don't normally see, right? You see my Spider-Man comic, you don't see me trying to work out how would I approach Spider-Man? How would I draw him? How would he be built differently than, say, the Superior Spider-Man who I also was drawing? You get to see the thinking behind the drawings. And then I will put finished pieces, usually commissions, but I'll include to the left of them the rough layout and then the pencils. You know, sometimes the inks, and there might be colors to it or there might be tones to it. And it makes for a less like polished art book, but it feels more like when you see the making of books for, like, say, I don't know, any animated feature or something. It's more like that without the talking. It's just all the like behind the scenes art that you don't normally, you won't get to see if you watch, say, Spider-Verse, but you love the film and you want to see how do they get there. And pick up the book and you can see all the developmental sketches and layouts and storyboards. That's kind of what I'm trying to make with this thing. But with not so much, I'm more of a show versus tell kind of person. So I don't do a lot of text in the book. All City, the volume zero, didn't have any in it. It was just the art. So it was 68 pages and there was not one inch that was wasted with whatever my dumb thoughts were at the time. Everything was just the art. I wanted to cram as much. I mean, honest to God, dude, I buy a lot of art books. And I'm not saying this to brag in any kind of way, but that first 68 page book, anybody else would have made that thing into like a 200 page book with a bunch of like fluff and just expanding it. So the new one is going to be actually 200 pages. And it's going to have literally everything from the developmental stuff, like I mentioned earlier, to finish stuff, like I mentioned earlier. But because of my Patreon, I make a quarterly art scene, and I'm going to take all that stuff and collect it in there. And it's everything from like sticker designs to art prints to like my personal sketches, like, you know, me maybe either coming up with a new character or just sketching my dogs. Like, this is, it's going to literally be like a curated, like I'm handing you my actual sketchbooks, but I've curated it down to all my favorite stuff.
Yeah, that's cool. And I think especially seeing, you know, pencils and early stages of art that you're sharing with your fans and anybody who backs the Kickstarter, there's an intimacy here. It's kind of, yeah, you on the page. Would you say that's true?
Absolutely. Especially since, you know, like, it's all the stuff that I wished I could see when I was a kid, right? Like, your stuff you wished, like, I mentioned Mark Silvestri. Like, I'm an adult and I'd kill to see what his sketchbooks looked like back then. Mm-hmm. Because you can sometimes find even a person's pencils, but you're rarely going to find what led up to that. You know, what's the layout? What were the character designs? What were the character sketches? All the stuff that came before that. So this is really me just like, it's probably going to be a flood of art in one book and like too much to take in, but I'd rather that than feel like I'm holding it back and just trying to present some sort of like kind of fake version of what I want to do. This thing is going to be just all the nuts and bolts. Everything's going to be tossed into it. And in a cohesive way, like, it's not just a collection of sketches with no like rhyme or reason to it. We tend to kind of group things. So you might see a bunch of developmental sketches for a character and then the layouts for a piece or a cover and then the pencils and then the cover itself. So you sort of see the stages as you build it. Or I might, another thing we'll do is take two pieces that were similar either in approach or in the time frame that they were done. So you see kind of a progression to it. But I'm also like opening up in terms of the style that's being presented, right? Because if you read my whatever Daredevil or Spider-Man or whatever, you're getting that one sort of Hollywood polished style. This thing will have the stuff where I just go nuts and splatter a bunch of ink and try to figure something out. It's just the, like it, like you said, it's the way more intimate, like personal look at all the stuff I'm drawing.
Yeah, and I think it's so interesting. So, I mean, even the process piece you have on the Kickstarter page with Spider-Man and Green Goblin, that's exactly what we're talking about here. And, you know, anybody who aspires, these are things you can learn, beyond, kind of reaching out and networking. There's no conventions right now with the pandemic.
Right.
So this is a great way to kind of get that fix. You want to tell us about some of the rewards that you're offering on this campaign, Mike?
Sure. So the obvious one is the book, which is, 200 pages, full color, everything is going to be high end and awesome. But because I didn't sell volume zero anywhere but the original Kickstarter campaign, we've bundled them so you can get volume zero and volume one together if you wanted. We're also doing like sort of art bundle, so you can get book and an art print that we're actually going to sit. I did this piece for my Patreon a few months back, where I hand painted a section of it with like gold paint, and I thought that'd be a cool thing to offer here. So although it's an art print, there's going to be like a hand embellishment to it, and I'm offering commissions through this thing, which I don't normally do, but I figure if you're willing to support us on something like this, that I ought to at least offer the opportunity for a commission. So there's going to be some 9x12 commissions with whatever character you ask me to draw, and that, some with like pages where you can get the books and a comic page. There's going to be like these big super bundles where you can get everything, like the books, a comic page, a commission. We're also doing remarked art books. So I'll do a freehand sketch in each of those remarked books. It's I did a French book years ago and did a signing there in France, and was struck by how their signings are less just like jotting your name and tossing a book at you. You sort of sit and do a quick little sketch for everybody in their books. And I thought that's a really cool way to like show someone you appreciate them picking up your book. So that's what we'll be doing with this thing. But it's set up in a way where you don't have to get the huge bundle. You can just get the single book, or you can get a digital version. So there's a bunch of stuff to choose from.
Yeah, that's great. I love the idea of remarks too, because it's just something that's unique. Nobody else has that. Only you have that one little.
Yeah, absolutely. I just thought it was so cool. I mean, like being there, you can't help. It kind of sucks we have to do it online. It was a cool experience in person because you get to talk with the person, and they tend to like share what it is they love and why they're choosing. Why are they even there at the con? That's unfortunately, we can't have that just yet. But the next best thing is this, where I get to, personalize each of the books. And even if we don't, if someone picks up a book and they don't want to spring for the remarked edition, I sign all the books. I've seen a lot of art book Kickstarters where they charge a little extra for like signing them. And that, I don't know, that always felt, I understand why it's done, but for me, I'm so grateful when someone supports one of these campaigns that I sign them all.
Yeah, that's great. And the thing I look forward to is picking it up and then, getting to go through it and kind of discover this art that you're sharing with us. And then when there are cons, I can't wait to bring it to you. And then, at a show, talk about, hey, what were you thinking here? Why did you make this choice?
Yeah.
To me, that's the
most. That almost be cooler, part. Right? That almost be cooler. And now that you say it that way, I didn't quite think of it. Like after they've seen the book and they have a chance to like come up with some questions. So that's cool. Yeah, right on.
So everybody, there's a link in the show notes to go and check out the campaign. We always encourage that. And even if you're, it's not for you, or you want to, but you just don't have the means right now, please just share it on social media, getting the word out to make sure that as many people who love Mike's art as possible are aware of the Kickstarter, so they can back it.
I appreciate all that too. And it's like you said, even if you can't back the book, just telling your friends about it is a huge deal. And, you know, I honestly also just, if you look at the book and it's not for you, look around. There's tons of cool stuff on Kickstarter. Every one of those projects is hugely important to some artists. So, you know, just back something.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a great community.
It is.
And yeah, we really need to be doing more to make sure we're supporting those that are coming up. So,
Yeah.
You're almost at the goal, Mike. As we're recording this, the goal's 10,000. You're about 8,500. Everybody, there's a little over 3 weeks to go. The campaign ends on Thursday, April 15th at 8:59 p.m. Mountain Time. So 7:59 Pacific, 10:59.
It's just about midnight here in the East Coast.
Yeah, it's exactly. But that being said, even though there's 3 weeks, I encourage you, go and check it out now and pledge now, because as we all know, we get busy and we forget, and you don't want to miss out on it. And as I said, even if you don't, you know, have the means or it's not for you, just go and check the page out. I think it's worth just seeing, Mike's process shots. They're just, they're really, really cool. So,
yeah, I mean, honestly, even just going and, I was surprised to hear that even just going, looking at the page, and leaving a comment or something, it sort of tweaks the Kickstarter algorithm, so it starts to put it out in front of more people. So yeah, even just looking at it is still a help.
That's great to know. I didn't realize that. So anyway, yeah. Mike, you know, best of luck as you are almost fully funded. Like I said, maybe you can even hit a stretch goal or two. The book's
that's great. The plan. Yeah.
I definitely plan on picking it up myself. Anything Thank else you want to plug? I know you've got, you know, you're working on Daredevil with Chip contributing here right. And there on that book. Anything else that you want our listeners to know as we're winding up here?
Yeah, I mean, the big one's Daredevil. The easiest way to support any stuff we do is my Patreon, which is Mike Hawthorne Art. So patreon.com, Mike Hawthorne Art. Or my Gumroad store. It's gumroad.com/Mike Hawthorne. We have, you know, all the art scenes that we do. I have a bi-monthly sketch collection project called Warm-Ups that we've been publishing through the store. So either of those two, go check them out. I'm also on all the socials. You can stop by and just say hi. We'll talk there.
Great. So I'll put a link to the campaign. I'll put a link to Mike's Patreon, as well as the Gumroad, and probably throw his Twitter and Instagram in the show notes as well, everybody. So if you're having trouble finding them, just go and look in the show notes. You'll be able to check it out. And I have noticed, Mike, you really do like talking art and having people ask you questions on Twitter.
I love it.
And whatnot.
Yeah, I absolutely do. I mean, it probably is. I'm on Instagram, like commenting everybody talking about art, which I probably should spend less time on. But I dig it. I like drawing.
Yeah, it's great. It shows your yeah. passion and how much you're still a fan of comics and people's great yeah. work. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right on.
Well, again, thanks for taking the time, Mike. Look forward to, you know, if you've been around so long, I've been doing this for long. I can't believe we've never met in person. So I look forward to
that. I know, it's weird. Yeah. Yeah. It's been great talking with you. Thanks so much for having me, man.
Yeah.
We'll have to do one in person someday.
Oh, for sure. For sure. We'll have to make that happen. So again, everybody, go and check out the campaign, share it on your social media, you know, get a book for yourself. Like I'm going to, like you go and check out the art and it's just, it's beautiful. It's amazing.
Thank you.
If you've, if you've been reading Daredevil, you know, this guy really hits it out of the park in storytelling and line work. So we want to thank you listeners for taking the time to join us as always, and we will talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.